The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is October 7th, 2014, and we are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, where we're not the biggest, but we're the best. And our motto is, we don't try, we succeed. And today we have a special guest. This is another first-timer, and he was recommended to me by Bud Jeffries, and we're very pleased to have Eric Gutman to the show. Eric is an active-duty naval officer. He flies planes, which is pretty damn good, I think. This guy's authored books. We're going to get into some pretty deep stuff. He's got a two-page list of things we can hit tonight. So, Eric, without further ado, welcome to Motivation and Muscle.
Hey, thanks a lot. And you know, my goal is to tell some stories and most importantly of all, to transmit something of value to your listeners. So a little about me. Hey, I'm a naval officer. I started my career in naval aviation. I was a naval flight officer, flew overland Iraq, a couple of deployments there, flew in the Pacific Theater, and I flew in the Mediterranean. And I guess one of the things that started to change how I view things and probably why I'm on this call is one time it was my sixth flight. I was still a trainee. We're flying overland Iraq. I'm still being taught how to use some of the equipment. And I just hear this beeping noise come from the cockpit. And as I look there, you know, I see a flurry of hands. And usually pilots are very cool, calm, and collected. And the next thing I know, over the what they call ICS, which is the intercommunication system, I hear, man, it's my sixth flight, you know, but we're overland Iraq, and this is 2004 when they're beheading people. It says, hey, we just lost an engine, and we have to descend to MANPAD range. MANPAD is Man Portable Air Defense System. So basically the shoulder-fired anti-aircraft rockets. And he says, if you see a core crew smoke, you got to let me know because I got to go into evasive maneuvers. And when that happened, it was like it triggered something in my brain because I thought it was for real. Like I thought that day I might die. I really did. And in what could only be nanoseconds, my whole life flashed before my eyes. Just like people talk about. And then it's like I could go forward in time and I would see like the two men, you know, dressed in their blues coming to talk to my wife. And I could see her face, you know, going, oh, God, what happened? And that experience taught me that when your mind believes something is real, it will activate things within it. And most importantly, I said, I want to live. I really kind of solidified my decision to live as long as I can, as best as I can. So while you're deployed, you know, you really have a lot of long days, 18-hour days, and you're eating bad food. You're eating galley food. And it's like I tell people that there's no slow-motion music. You know, there's no orchestra in the background. And it's just being tired, and whatever condition you had, you slowly wean it away because you're working that hard. Now, of course, the deployment ends, and you go back home, and you can kind of recover some of that, but that's why I'm going to talk a lot about how I changed my approach and why recovery is so important. So up until that epiphany that I had in the air in Iraq, I basically followed a bodybuilding type program. I made sure I hit every part once a week. I ate, I don't know, six times, five times a week. I'm sorry, a day.
Yeah.
A week is pretty Spartan. So 5 to 6 times a week. And my goal was kind of symmetry, right? You know, if you got to hit everything so that you're balanced. And I thought, you know, hey, you know, I've achieved, you know, 405 in the squat, you know, 350, 365 deadlifts and bench press. I'm good. You know, I thought I had it all covered. And, you know, I ran, so I thought I was good. But as I started thinking about recovery and reading and learning and just going outside of the mainstream bodybuilding approach, I realized that the body usually works as a unit. And I got involved into Commando Krav Maga because when I flew over land Iraq, I didn't really know how to defend myself. Right. And I thought it was very, very, you know, real scenario. So what happens if the plane gets shot down and there I am and I have a 9mm and some terrorist puts an AK-47 to my face? And I didn't really know what to do. I mean, I just, you know, there's this thing in the military called the last act of defiance, which is if you're surrounded and you know they're going to take you, you just take as many of them as you can. But you know you probably won't make it out. So before, you know, we get into the bravado of that thing, at that point in time, I was the officer in charge of my crew, which means that 24 people's lives depended on my actions. So I thought, if I do the last act of defiance, that's fine if I make the choice, but I'm also kind of dooming the other 24 members of my crew to a fate that's perhaps not the best. So I really, luckily nothing ever happened. We flew all our missions and you know, that didn't happen, but that bothered me. So when I came back stateside, I started to learn Commando Krav Maga because it was a very practical system to learning how to deal with aggression. Their goal is survival. So if you're going to do MMA and win, you're going to learn how to, you know, take somebody out to the flex, how to, you know, that was interesting. And while I was there, I got exposed to this concept of training the body as a single unit. So, you know, it, the way it was jokingly explained to me is like, if you do bodybuilding, it's like, they call it like the butcher approach. Like you go in one day for a side of shoulder, and the next day you go for a side of legs, right? And it's always these separated parts. And, you know, of course, I started getting into Commando Krav Maga, and they train a completely different way, which was a mixture of jiu-jitsu training, conditioning, Israeli special forces type drills, and Olympic conditioning drills. And that started veering me away. And, I, you know, my conditioning improved, and I started to see that there was more to life than just bodybuilding. And you know, the funny thing is, when I work out in the gym, I've noticed that if you're not doing a strict bodybuilding or CrossFit-type workout, people have a very hard time understanding just what the hell it is that you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of the stuff that I've created or something, I didn't think anybody would care for it. But like you said, I mentioned Bud, and I met him at a seminar, and I had written a book, and I sent it to him. I gave it to him at the seminar just as a gift because I like the guy. I've read his stuff. I've seen his DVDs. And 1 month later, I get a call, an email like, hey, we'd like to distribute your stuff, your book. I said, sure, what does that mean? It means we sell it and you get a cut. Okay, fine. You know, why should it be laying around in an office? It wasn't a commercial venture per se. It was just I wrote this thing for me and but liked it. So then he says, do you have anything else? And then I said, well, I took this course I made because I keep very detailed journals, so I know what training brought about which results. And he says, send that to me. Again, like I'm thinking, man, Buck can squat 1,000 pounds, you know, like why would he care? But I send him the stuff and he goes, I love it. And then go, and I ask like, why? And the reason he says, because I would have never written this course. If if you would have written a how to squat 1,000 pound course, I already did that. I have no use for it. But, he says, but you're a naval officer, and you took the whole body weight kettlebell thing into a very practical way, and you're in the military. You had to do this to remain physically fit to standards. And I told him, like, what surprised me is, like, I didn't run for a single day in 4 months, and I still shaved 15 seconds of my run time.
Wow.
And that became Extreme Military Fitness, which is the course that we sell together. And that's also the thing that proved to me that this type of training, your whole body as a unit, provides results. However, what I find is the missing key for a lot of people is recovery. Right. So I'm going to tell you another little story. Sure. When I was getting my wings, it was a bunch of us naval officers. We already had our wings. We were at electronic warfare school. And we took a day off, and it's like 20 or 15 guys and girls. And we went to a go-kart track. Now, there's some smart people that are like engineers, but we're all very competitive. We all want to win. So we're all analyzing all the go-karts to see if there's like the fast go-kart. And you know what? We realized that they were all the same. They really were. There wasn't like a bad go-kart. They were all exactly the same. And we're saying like, how can I win, right? That's how we're thinking. And this one guy, this engineer, he goes, the key is not to bleed off energy. So I thought about that. I says, well, that's the key to progress in training and to a long life. You see, people get this bravado, this devil-may-care attitude, and they injure themselves or they train stupidly. Hell, I've done it. You know, I was 18 and 20, and I did stuff. You know, I would do, you know, this thing when I was doing bench when I would say, okay, I'm going to bench 315 for four reps and then immediately strip it to 225, do four more reps, and then immediately strip it and do 135. And I got really strong, and I was doing like, you know, bar to chest type stuff. But after 3 months of doing that, I had some real shoulder trouble, and I couldn't bench press for years until I realized that, you know, I start, like you said, you start reading, researching, how can I get back in the game? So I could only do like dumbbell presses with the palms forward. Then I started realizing that if you were to do the bench press and you keep your arms parallel to the deck, that means the bar doesn't touch your chest, it's not going to hurt. So I knew there were always ways around it. And what I, you know, and this is regarding recovery. Perhaps it's not going to be a very popular approach, but I've learned to actually limit the weight I use. And I learned this from a naval officer who was training in Tennessee at a board we were both attending. And his rule was nothing more than 225. And I said, why? And he says, because that's how he avoids injuries. Now, I'm 41. And, you know, I understand the reason, but now I made my weight 315 pounds. So for me, after 315 pounds, I don't really need to go above it. And that's one way to – you go deeper. The other thing I found, which may or may not be very enthusiastic to some people, is I actually take more days off. I find that a scenario is training one day hard and then taking a break for 2 days, maybe 3 days if necessary. I find that that works wonders. What is important, though, for recovery is that you do something every day. And what is the most important thing you can do every day? Movement. 10,000 steps a day will make you healthier than working out. It won't make you strong, but the healthiest thing you can do is to take 10,000 steps a day. And now, you know, there's this craze with all these movement trackers, and it's really fun. It's very easy to get your 10,000 steps a day. One of the things I was reading, which I mentioned to you, I'm going to do a liver cleanse, and this lady, Hulda Clark, healed a lot of people of so-called incurable diseases. And she says that the two healthiest things that a person can do is walk every day and do liver cleansings on a regular basis, which could be, you know, every 6 months or every 3 months. But back to recovery, there are things I found that really help you to recover, and also the most important thing for a lot of people, both people that train and people who age, is getting out of pain. You see, when you're in pain, it affects your movement, and once your movement is affected, then it starts going downhill because you become movement compromised. So I found, and I'm sure like everybody else out there has heard of this, joint mobility is the key to A, getting out of pain, and then guaranteeing that you have full use of your body for the rest of your life. That right there, so I'll do joint mobility or a version of joint mobility every single day. And everybody who's trained has heard about it, but, you know, it's something that people learn. They do it during the seminar, and they never do it again. You know, because it's boring, they don't think it's cool, whatever. And it's funny because I have at the base, I mean, you know, the head trainer there, Frank, he knows I do the mobility. He knows I've got the website. He knows what I do. And he sometimes tells me, go tell these guys about mobility. They don't want to do it. And I said, hey, like, they're going to have that same body in 20, 30, and 40 years. If they don't want to do it now, you know, they're going to be sorry. And I'll tell you some of the reasons why I'm so in love with joint mobility. Of course, when I think everybody who learns kettlebells gets joint mobility kind of like kind of package deal. But I kind of drifted away from it. It's like, I know mobility, whatever. Because, you know, our time is short, right? So we're always seeking to get the most workout, and then we go. We never incorporate recovery. So I was deployed to the Middle East, and on my off day, I went to the base gym. And sometimes they have classes. Now, what I mean when sometimes they have classes means that there's a military gym, which is basically one of these big tents, and they have rooms. And when there's not an official class going on, a guy will say, hey, I know capoeira. Can I use the space and teach? And they go, yeah, have fun. So I read about it, and I show up at this place on my off day. Hey, you guys are doing capoeira. Can I join? Sure.
Yep.
But it's not like somebody's teaching you. It's like basically they go at it. So basically they put on the music and, hey, go. And I should have noticed that everybody took their shoes off. But I just came in late, and they said, and I started kicking and playing with these guys. I torqued my ankle, and I said, okay, no big deal. 3 weeks, it'll be fine, whatever. So 6 months later, now I'm back in the States, and this thing still bothers me. I go to a friend of mine who was a chiropractor, and he says, dude, I'm so sorry, but that's like a ligament. That's going to be 18 months to heal. And I don't know what happened. I got pissed. I was like, hell no, it's not going to take 18 months. And I started searching my mind. What can I do? There's got to be something I can do. And I remembered joint mobility. Now, there's a really good DVD by Mike Mahler, actually, called The Boys Are Back in Town. But in it, there's a segment by Steve Maxwell.
Yep.
And he has this thing with the foot and how he's helped people heal their knees through the foot. Well, long story short, I basically took that DVD and I did only the I did everything later on, but I did just the foot portion morning and night. So I spent like – I don't know, 5 to 7 minutes on my feet in the morning and at night. And in 1 week, my pain was gone.
Wow,
so
from
8 months, it went to a week. Then I stopped doing it, and the pain kind of started creeping back. So I said, okay, I'm going to have to do this for the rest of my life. And that was my, you know, another epiphany. So from that moment on, I realized that joint mobility every day is the greatest injury prevention thing you can do. And second, is the fastest way to heal. And what I found is from people that don't train. So you and I, when we have pain, it might be related to being sore, which is not the bad pain. That's good pain. You know, but it could be to maybe we did something a little wrong, and then there's the joint pain, which is always bad. So, but there's a lot.
Well,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I had a thing happen where a lot of the stuff that happens to me, it's not from training. Probably about 3 months ago, had new wall-to-wall put in the house, and I'm coming down the stairs in my bare feet, just kind of like, instead of walking, like, I won't say running, but coming down quick, you know? And, you know, you'll hit the edge. Well, I hit the edge, and I pinned my leg right behind my knee, basically. And if it wasn't for all those years of doing partials and ISOs, I probably would have blew my knee right out from under me. But it's been pretty sore, a lot of clicking. You know, I go and get active release technique and you know, et cetera, and, you know, do some stretching and things like that. But there is a clicking sound, which I never had. There's nothing torn in the knee, but, you know, for a while there, I couldn't go full speed at all. And at times, if I'm really hammering on it, you'll feel stuff like that. And unfortunately, you know, if you got a knee problem or an ankle problem, that's going to affect everything you're touching and doing. And mobility is essential. I mean, I don't know if this will ever be 100%. I don't know if anything's going to ever be 100% because, you know, I put a licking on myself pretty hard all the time. And like you, you know, I've learned via sometimes you want to train super hard and heavy and maybe take an extra day if you got to. Or what I try to do, which I know we're going to be talking about with testosterone, is I try to see if I can get a big, heavy, hard workout done in, say, 35 minutes. I think it was Arthur Saxon, if I remember. I think I'm right with this. I remember reading a lot of old material on him, and I think he wouldn't go any more than 40-minute workouts, and if he wasn't done, he'd stop right there, and that was it, and he'd pick up the next time. So I think that's, you know, big food for thought there.
Yeah, so getting back to the recovery part, you know, the other thing that has really helped,
yep,
and remind me to talk about speed and time as it relates to recovery, is this thing called the vestibular reset. Have you heard about this?
No, I haven't.
This is something that is really going to help you, like, in every sense, like recovery mentally and physically. So the way it was explained to me by Steve Maxwell is, like, basically they call it, like, the four-quadrant system of strength. So if you can imagine, you know, four squares. On the first square, quadrant one, we'll call that the vestibular system. So the vestibular system of the body is it's what determines your ability to move, and it's from the time you were born to about 20 years old, and it incorporates the vestibular system in the brain. It incorporates your eyes, which tells you where you are in time and space. It incorporates your ears because it has your sense of balance through the inner ear canals. It incorporates your feet through the sense of proprioception. So all these inputs go into the vestibular system, and it determines how well you move. The problem is that if you have gaps in your vestibular system and then you load a pattern, which means you put weight on a pattern that's not correct, you're basically shortening your life. So they explained it to me that way. Okay, I'm interested. So because they said the other quadrants are, so quadrant two would be the high-level elite athlete. You know, let's talk about football players and MMA guys, so elite-level athletes that have to be good in multiple skill sets. All right? So here's an interesting thing. If working out is so healthy, and I think, like, football training is some of the healthiest, you know, like sprinting
and
and power moves, how come those guys have a life expectancy of about 64 years?
Mm-hmm.
So then you go, okay, so basically, again, getting back to the recovery thing, there is such a thing as working out too much and burning out your body, right? So if you want to train forever for, like, you know, like as long as you can, as best as you can, you got to incorporate some type of recovery, because these guys train harder than most people, but then again, it's the games that take them out. So elite level training shortens your life. All right, quadrant three is the recreational athlete. That's a person that gets to choose what areas he wants to be good at. That could be the recreational CrossFitter, to the person who's just in fitness for himself, to the person who has a particular strength hobby, right? And then quadrant four is a specialist. That's somebody who does one thing, like Lance Armstrong. He does Tour de France, and that's his whole purpose for living. Or you have a 100-meter sprinter. That's all he does. That's all he cares about. So most people fall in quadrant three because you have a wider range of skill sets that you can use, but you can still recover. So if you have a movement gap from the first quadrant, like, you know, from growing up that you never developed it, then it will always hamper your performance in any of the quadrants, you know, whether it's two, three, and four. So how do you fix the vestibular system? Well, it's basically doing what they call the cross crawls. So this is the notion of doing bear crawl, front and back. And it's funny because I've done all these crawls, all right? And I've been training for a long time. I studied physical education. And the first time they said, now do it backward, and again, you have to do it backward in a cross-crawl motion. That means that when the right foot goes back, the left hand goes back, it was like a short circuit. I literally felt like my brain stopping, like, how do I do this? How do I do this?
Yeah.
Whereas front, it's like an ingrained pattern. So I did, you know, bear crawls front and back, leopard crawls front and back, and Spider-Man crawl front and back. And you wouldn't believe, it took me like 2 days of basically going at this speed, left leg back, right arm back. Because if I try to go back, I would go back to going unilateral, which would mean going like left leg, left hand. So the vestibular reset, which can be, again, I've just said that that's all you need to do. If you do, you know, like three sets of bear crawl, 10 steps forward, 10 step back, and then, you know, three sets of 10, you know, leopard crawls forward, leopard crawls backward, and three sets of 10, you know, Spider-Man crawls forward and Spider-Man crawls back within about easily 3 months or 2 months or a month, depending on where you are today, you will have reset your vestibular system, which means you would have fill in the gaps. And the way I put it to the test is that I did nothing but Spider-Man crawls. What I did was I would do Spider-Man crawls for 1 minute, and then I would do walking for 2 minutes. And that would be my only workout for 8 weeks. And I wanted to see if anything really did improve. Did my body really become better from doing that? Of course, because when you choose something, you're also negating something else. At that point in time, I was doing this other workout where I was doing I was taking these heavy kettlebells to the edge of the gym where I was doing farmers walks, and then I was, after the workout, I was bringing them back into the CrossFit gym, you know what they call that.
Right.
And I noticed that before I started doing the cross crawls, I would take these 70-pound kettlebells overhead, and basically halfway through, let's say, just to say a number, at the 100-meter mark, I basically have to go into the rack. I couldn't keep on carrying them overhead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was fine. You know, I said, okay, you know, I got an overhead carry for 100, 150 meters. Now I'm going to do the next 100 meters in just in the rack position. After I did nothing but 8 weeks of just the Spider-Man crawl, really just one exercise, my overhead carry doubled. I basically was able to walk the whole distance. And again, I didn't do anything. I didn't touch a weight for 8 weeks. So that's a thing that I've realized. It's helping a lot of people. It helps people to learn.
Yep, yep.
There's a book by Dr. Hannaford. It's called Brain Moves. And this is how they're helping kids to learn, by tying the vestibular system of the brain. That means learning through movement activation. So all these kids are having problems. Instead of telling them to sit down and shut up and just read your book, they're doing the vestibular resets, activating their brain, laying down new neural tracks, and then their ability to learn increased. So these two things together, mobility and the vestibular reset, is one of the best things you can do for recovery, not just for your recovery from workouts, but basically for recovery from life, and to make sure that you're always in that flow of being ahead of the power curve. In aviation, there's this notion that during a flight, there are different curves of stuff you have to do. Like, you know, during takeoff, you run a list. During mission, you run another list. And then during landing, you're running another list. So being ahead of the power curve is making sure that when you're about to land, like, okay, your wheels are three down unlocked. You've already made your, you know, check-in with tower. If you get behind the power curve, that means that you're running all your checks, but you still haven't put your landing gear down and you're about to land. That's a really bad place to be, right? Makes sense. So,
yeah.
So when it comes to aging, right, or what people call aging, which I'm starting to refuse to believe in it, you know, you got to refuse to believe in the decrepitude. Then you have to address it. It's not going to happen by itself. And full mobility and the vestibular reset, which I call the fountain of youth, those two things together is some of the best things you can do to maintain your body for as long as you can, as best as you can. Now, going back into recovery, here are two things I found which will dramatically increase your recovery and your ability to work out safely. Number one, which is going to sound extremely elemental, is perfect form.
Right.
And perfect alignment of your body. And here's what I mean by that. When I was in college, I took Chen-style Tai Chi. And I remember I was reading in a book that they one of these masters said that when you throw a punch, he says, throw the punch like you don't care if it gets cut down with a sword. You don't care if you lose the arm. You throw the arm, you throw that punch, and you have, you know, reckless abandon for the arm. That's the way to be the most powerful martial artist. And I think a lot of people apply that to their training. And what I mean by that is that people are very cavalier with their bodies, and they also have this notion that, well, it won't matter when I'm 60. That's which I think is a very mistaken notion. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. When I was in the bodybuilding thing when I was 20, I saw that a lot of these guys who were in their late 20s, early 30s, you know, were taping their legs to the squat. And they would keep pushing, and then they would blow their knees out, and then they can never squat. But they had like this what they call like their moment of glory, right? You know, it's like, but I did it. You know, I was able to do it once. And another guy I met, this is in college. I'm sorry, this is a 16-year-old kid. This guy was in awesome shape. He was strong. He was a football player, during one season, and then during the off football season, he was a sprinter. And we were talking, and he already had two knee surgeries. And I go, in my mind, how in the world does a 16-year-old have two knee surgeries? So it's the way they were training. And what I mean by perfect alignment is if you do something with perfect alignment, then you're fully aware of everything in your body and how it's moving, and there should never, ever be any pain. Now, there can be physical muscle struggle, but you'd be surprised. And, hey, I'm catching myself and correcting this on a daily basis. And I'll give you an example. Let's say you come in with a mindset of, I'm going to break a new PR, damn it. You know, new whatever the number is, and you get under the bar and you just, you know, you go for it and you don't care that your knees kind of buckle. You're going to push. And you do it, and you have this great elation. And then your knee bothers you for a couple of days. Fine, whatever. What I realized, getting back to the key is to never bleed off energy, is to always be scanning your body when you train. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example today. So to me, when I squat, my focus of perfect form and alignment is I got to feel the four corners of the foot for each leg on the ground. If you feel that the whole time you're squatting, then nothing should hurt in your joints, you know? And here's the funny part. That's my new mentality. And again, I was working with 305, which again, it's not that big a weight. So by the third time, I mean, I'm doing heavy singles because in a single, you can concentrate completely. And I notice a little bit of pain. I go, okay, where the hell's that coming from? So my right knee was buckling in just a little bit. You know, you couldn't see it, but I was pushing past the buckling, right? And that's why it was kind of bothering me. But again, if I'm going back to how do I recover and how do I train, you know, to live as long as I can, as best as I can, I said, let me see what's going on. When I became aware of that, all I did was to ensure that as my four corners of the foot are stepping on the ground, me kind of buckle in, I basically spiraled. And I don't think I spiraled so much physically as the intention to spiral out, which basically makes the knee kind of spiral outward. You prevent it from buckling in. And I finished my workout, and it actually became easier, and there was no more knee pain. So the first set was good. The second and third, I felt a little bit of pain. By the fourth set, I said, stop. I mean, I didn't stop the workout. I said, let me see where I am. I fixed it, and then the reps became easier and easier. So right now, I don't have any pain. I can tell you that 5 and 10 years ago, I would be a lot more cavalier, like, I don't care. I'm going to go for it, and I said I was going to do 10 heavy singles with this weight, and I would do it come hell or high water.
Right.
I've learned to walk away from it. The other thing, so to do like a small recap on recovery, taking the required days off, a lot of people make more progress training through really hard days than training every day. Unless they're in a team and they're training for a sport or they're training a certain way. I'm talking about if you want to recover for health and be strong and actually get better numbers every workout, you have to have that recovery time. Second is mobility. You got to do mobility on a daily basis to recover from your previous workout and also to kind of injury-proof your body. Third is the vestibular reset. If you don't have full ownership of your vestibular system, you need to do that. It's for your benefit. And finally, it's this idea of perfect alignment when you do any movement. So at any point you feel joint pain, then you know you've got to reassess how you're doing it. The last thing I found works a lot with recovery and just making workouts fun is the time factor. And I'll give you an example. I was once wondering that, you know, there's all these posts on Facebook about burpees don't like you either. Burpees, zero people like this. And I remember, you know, because burpees are a part of my extreme military fitness course. I've had four kids with my wife, and she was like, hey, I want to train, you know. So I said, all right, do what I do. And of course, I made it simpler for her. So if I was doing, I don't know, 10 or 15 burpees, I could just do five.
Yep.
But, you know, again, I was transmitting this urgency, right? You do burpees as fast as you can. And she was hating it. And then by the fifth burpee, you know, she was actually getting a little bit of pain. She just got, I don't want to do that ever again. You know, it sucks. And you go, no, just go slow. I says, I can't. Because once you start doing it, I kind of start doing it at your pace. I kind of like lock into your rhythm. And I can't go slower. And most people, they get a lot of pain from doing the burpees. And I started to analyze. Even I've gotten like, it feels uncomfortable. So I started to analyze what I'm doing. And I started thinking about, again, go back alignment. So what did I do and most people do? When you start going really fast, people start flaring their elbows out, and it creates the wrong impingement on the shoulders. But hey, you're going to go as fast as you can, so you press through it and you don't care, and then your neck hurts, your shoulders hurt, you know, your wrists hurt, and all this stuff. And then depending on how you're jumping, like, you know, like a behemoth or something, now you get lower back pain. So it's very common, not just the conditioning of the lung power you're developing that's going to smoke you, but people are getting shoulder, ankle, neck, and lower back pain from doing burpees when they're just going at it, you know, like almost like a macho thing. So what I did was I wanted to incorporate this recovery thing. I basically said, I'm going to do this so well that it's actually a therapy, because that's kind of like another thing I tried. How can I make your workout a therapy? So not like it feels bad and then I need to do therapy to undo the workout. I'm going to make the workout itself a therapy. So I realized I was going to do one breath per movement, and I would not move until I had perfect alignment. So what does that mean? From standing, I would put my hands just, you know, in front of my toes, and when I would kick back, I would make sure that I would rotate my shoulders and pull my shoulders back while the pit of the elbow is facing forward. So that's a specific torquing motion that then you pull your shoulders back and your neck forward. So that's inhale, going down, exhale, you go into the plank with this perfect torquing of the shoulders. And what happens is if you do it that way, what you'll actually will feel is space in the neck, because you're basically pulling your traps and your shoulders back, and you're elongating your neck forward. So right then, you removed all sorts of shoulder and neck strain. The other thing it does, by having your shoulders torqued perfectly and the pit of the elbow facing forward, is that when you do the push-up, now you're doing correct push-up, right? And as opposed to the elbows flaring out, impinging on the shoulders push-up. And now when you come up, what I realize is, well, to increase your flexibility, when you jump, you're going to jump so that the feet are outside your hands. So now you're going to fall into like the deep sumo squat, right?
Yep.
And then once you're in perfect alignment, you've taken an inhale to get into the sumo squat, you exhale and you just do a slight jump. Not the tuck jump, because if you land bad on a tuck jump, it's going to hurt your knees. I know. I've done it. And by doing it that way, where you tie in one breath per movement, and you don't move until you have perfect alignment, what happens is it becomes almost like a therapy. And here's the interesting thing. Now, most of this thing I told, like, I do experiments. Like, I don't know if it's wrong or right. But once I get something, then I need guinea pigs. You know, I need to make sure, is this duplicatable? Is this true? If I do it with other people. And I went to an anti-aging seminar, and again, like, I had this 50-year-old woman. She said she did it, and she said she finally loved burpees, and her lower back pain went away. All right? So then I'm going, and here's the funny thing. I did the first 10 really slow, and what I mean by really slow is that I only do, like, so if a burpee, you divide it into four parts: kneel, plank, push-up, squat, jump. You know, it's four breaths. Then as I got into the fifth, and I would do sets of 10 and then walk. So do 10, perfect, walk. By the time I got to the 50th repetition, I would actually start doing it faster, and I would get less tired. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm on to something here. Then what I would do is I would do only one inhale and the rest of the burpee on an exhale. But by this point, because you've programmed the right movement pattern, that's what I'm saying. It takes a while of going slow and making sure it's perfect every single time, that your body now does it automatically. And you'll actually go faster. So the last 50 burpees, I do them faster, and I get less tired. And my wife had a PR. She did 75 burpees, the first time in her life she ever did that much. Because remember, before she was doing five, and she was like, screw this, I'm not doing it, stop. And the most she had done one time was like, I tried her to do 50, she did like 40, and she said, stop it. And now she did 75, and we didn't want to stop. Because again, what I did was I made sure that the alignment factor was perfect and that the time factor was taken away. So when you have time pressure, like, I got to do 100 burpees in 2 minutes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now you just gave yourself time pressure. And what's going to happen? You're going to say, screw the form.
Yep.
Screw everything. I'm, by hook or by crook, I'm going to get this number in this time. And also it creates pressure. So what I say, if you remove the time constraint and you just say, I'm going to do 100 burpees, but I'm not going to tie a time deadline to it, and I'm only going to move when my movement pattern and breathing pattern is perfect, what happens is you unlock your body's perfect rhythm. And over time, I'm saying within same workout, after the first 50 reps, you basically program this effortless way into your body, and you not only enjoy the burpee, but you start going faster without getting tired. And I've done it with three or four people that, again, the last thing I would imagine is like somebody tells me their lower back pain went away from doing burpees, because usually people get stiff necks, shoulder problems, and lower back pain from doing burpees when you go, like, I got to do 500 in 2 minute type style.
Right.
So these are some very simple things that I've incorporated to increase my recovery and also to again, to live as long as I can, as best as I can. So now,
Eric, you know what the whole thing is? It's basics. And basics, if you look at anything, seems to be the course of action to take. One thing I want to hit upon if we're close to end of recovery here is, if you have some time, I'd like to really hit upon some testosterone tonight. And you've come out with many things about that. And this is something that you and I both know. We spoke before we came on. This is a major concern, especially in the male population now. And I've got a lot of feelings about what it is. But are you set with recovery, or do you want to expand anymore? I didn't want to cut you off.
I was about to
go ahead.
To testosterone.
Okay, beautiful then.
Yeah.
Obviously, we as men always want to be like the warriors and conquerors, obviously. And, you know, with weightlifting especially, and it's not just testosterone that goes into power for any of that stuff, but testosterone now is like everywhere you look. You know, if it's not somebody with ED or this, that, and the other thing, you know, you can just turn on a TV at night and it's always related to something that has to do with that or this. How did you, number one, get into this? And was there anything that directly alerted you to what was going on with males and testosterone?
So I attend a lot of anti-aging seminars, right? I've got all friends into it. And, for a long time, again, I'm an active duty naval officer. You know, I saw this whole testosterone thing, you know, and like my wife says, like, it's like cheating, right? You can't do anything unnatural.
Right.
But I was talking to these guys who eat a lot better than I do. You know, I deploy, and sometimes I'm in a ship. You're not going to go have your home-cooked meals or your organic garden. You're going to eat whatever is on the ship or whatever is on the base. And these guys who've taken a lot better care of themselves because, you know, they're civilians and very health conscious, we're talking about, you know, anti-aging, specifically testosterone shots and growth hormone shots. And I just saw it as, you know, you're kind of cheating, and, you know, it's something that maybe people with money get sucked into that thing because they can, you know. But here's what really, really got me hooked into, you got to look into this. And what one of my friends was explaining is, if you can keep youthful levels of hormones in your body, then you're almost immune to disease.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me say that again, because that is what really changed my mindset. And you got to let it sink in. It says again, if you can maintain youthful levels of hormones in your body, you're almost immune to disease.
So I agree with you.
What is it that these anti-aging people do? They go to an anti-aging doctor, which does not take, this is usually you're paying out of pocket for all this, and they take your blood work, and then they take your numbers, and then they try to get you to the 26-year-old version of you and keep you there as long as they can. So it has to do with diet. It has to do with supplements. It has to do with exercise. And in the case of these gentlemen, it had to do with testosterone shots and growth hormone shots. I am an active duty naval officer, and I can't take anything that is not in my military record. So that means I would have to go to a medical doctor in the Navy and say, I want to do this, and then they would have to prescribe it. So therefore, I had to look at other means. And to be honest with you, I think at the time I was 39 or 40, and the first thing I said was, you need to get your numbers so that you know where you're at. So I got my testosterone blood work, and it was 585. And hey, I'm strong. I, you know, one of the great indicators of testosterone is like, are you able to have sex, you know,
yep,
on a regular basis and with good performance? Because libido means you're just, you know, horny, right? But your ability to perform, right, which is a separate issue, is related to testosterone. And I remember I called him back, you know, because it kind of got me interested. Yeah, yeah. So I got my number. It's 585. And he said something that kind of pissed me off. He says, hey, that's a good number, but you're still in your age range. And what he was, you know, and I was like,
yeah,
you know, I eat broccoli,
yeah,
and
yep,
do squats, yep, and I lead a clean life. What is this bull? And he,
yep,
said, look, if you don't address it, you're going to have great numbers for your age, but you're still going to have the numbers for your age.
Yep.
So I started really getting deep into it, you know, and you know, a lot of the, like some of the Mike Marsh stuff says, you know, the ideal range is 600 to 900. All right.
Yep.
So I started thinking, okay, if I were to raise the testosterone on my own, like what would I do? So of course, you know, let's talk with the diet. You have to eat clean, wholesome, nutritious food. You know, it has to be real food. If you're eating McDonald's and, you know, processed food, that right there is going to prevent you, because they have a lot of xenoestrogens. Xenoestrogens are substances that when consumed act like estrogen in the body, and they compete for testosterone. So you raise estrogen, the person would raise their estrogen, which increases their female-like capabilities, which is bad if you're a guy, because guys don't like bitch tits,
mm-hmm,
and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Right? And,
yep,
and by doing that, it decreases your testosterone. So that's a whammy right there. And the other thing I was thinking, well, and now we go into this whole idea of knob tweaking. I said, if I were to structure my training so that it would mimic a testosterone shot, what would I have to do? And, you know, it's kind of like what you already kind of like hinted at. I said, well, if I can train heavy enough to like stimulate that spurt and then get out so I don't like overtrain, that would probably be the best thing. So what I did was, in my first experiment, I did training once every 5 days, because the guy, I met a guy who was taking a testosterone injection, and he says he takes it once every 5 days. So I said, okay, so I need to do something that causes my body to squirt testosterone and then take 5 days off and then do it again. And what I came upon with was heavy rest pause squats. And I like the way that Mike Mahler says, you know, you take like 85 to 95 rep max, and you do perfect reps. And what you do is you do one perfect rep, you,
yep,
rack, you wait 1 minute, and then on the minute, you do another rep. And of course, the perfect weight is one that, you know, those last one or two reps are kind of hard. If it's easy to do the last two reps, you got to go up the weight.
Absolutely.
And when I did that, and then I did one workout was squats, you know, and then the next workout was deadlift. Same thing, heavy,
yep,
rest, pause, deadlifts. Again, only 10 reps, and then you stop. You stop,
yep,
and get out. And the only thing, other thing I would do, I was doing I was doing sprint intervals on the treadmill at a high incline to trigger hormone, because, you know, growth hormone is activated through short, very intense bouts of exercise. So I would set that stuff to like 10 degree incline, 10 speed for like 30 seconds, and then I would walk for a minute and a half to 2 minutes, you know, and I would take the incline out. So I would sprint at a high incline, high speed for 30 seconds. Then I would take away the incline and put it back to walking speed for 2 minutes, and I would do that 8 times. And the only supplement I did take, I took maca.
Yep.
See, my wife is Peruvian, so I've been going to Peru since 1997, and I heard about maca then, and it was always amazing to me. I go, how come when I take this maca in Peru, I feel it like within the day, and I take this maca in the United States, and it sucks?
Yeah.
And I found the answer. I was in Peru talking to my wife's uncle, who runs a stem cell business. And because he's in the medical community, I was talking to a Peruvian doctor. And here's the interesting thing. He says that maca oxidizes very quickly. So if you ever buy maca and it comes in a canister, that empty air is the potency of the maca. So if you buy maca, it has to be vacuum sealed. Otherwise, right. you're just losing potency. And that thing may be 2 or 3 years old. So the other thing would be try to get, you know, if you can get maca that was vacuum sealed and it is that year's harvest, you're going to really feel it. And that was happening to me when I went to Peru, because my father-in-law went to the Peruvian, you know, Agronomical Institute, and then they're doing a lot of research with organic, you know, crops, including maca. Mm-hmm. So I would go to Peru, I would take this maca, I would feel it great, then I would run out and I'd go to a health food store and I buy maca, and it sucks. So I every time I go to Peru, I would buy like 10 kilos or more of maca. And so to recap what I did, I focused on heavy squatting and heavy deadlifting, training once every 5 days. The only cardio I did would be sprint intervals to boost my growth hormone. And then I would take maca. Now I would take 15 to 18 grams a day.
Wow.
And I would take it with my food. So when I had breakfast, I had a teaspoon of maca with it. When I had lunch, I had a teaspoon of maca with it. And when I had dinner, I had a teaspoon of maca. So doing that by itself, after 8 weeks, I had boosted my testosterone to about 690.
Wow.
Now I'm in the 600 to 900 range I want it to be at. So, and again, if people go to my website, www.ericgutman.com, you can get the report for free. You just put your email and you get the 10-page report, which details exactly what I did. And I go into more detail into the recovery, why sleep is important,
sure.
how I use the maca. You can see my exact workout protocols that I use. It's very to mimic. That was the first time I did it. And then it was like, this is true. Like, if you address your workouts as how do I train for hormones? Because, you know, you can train to win a contest. You can train for looks. You can train to win a strongman competition. You can train to be as strong as you can. And I said, what if I just train for hormones? Like, what if I train as, like, you know, the poor man's testosterone shot and the poor man's growth hormone shot, right?
Right.
Well, then it's a lot simpler. And then the second time I did it, I think I've got enough 780.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
on my own
wow.
naturally.
Wow.
So I go, okay, you can do this. Now, here's the funny thing. If I had never gotten that first testosterone test, which I thought I was doing pretty well on my own, you know, that means that 10 or 20 years from now, then I would have had, you know, like, and so in 20 years when I was 60, I may have had the normal testosterone of a 6-year-old, and it would have been
correct.
Less than 585.
Well, Eric, let me ask you this quick. Is there anywhere other than where you get it from your father-in-law, is there anywhere sourced in the United States that you have found that has a good maca? Because I know we're going to get emails about this to me. Is there anywhere you would recommend, or there's nothing here?
There's actually only one woman that I've personally met and interviewed that can do it. And her maca is, sure, her name is Daniela Velarde. And if you go to IncaLiving.com, you can get real organic maca from Peru that when you get it, you know it's this year's harvest. And it's organic. And they one thing that she does that I think was very clever, and I haven't seen this before, is she has a blended maca. So that means the yellow, the red, and the black maca blended together. And before that, you know, if you go to Peru and get it from Ecuador, but again, you know, who's going to travel to Peru to get it? I was helping a friend of mine distribute Ecuandino maca, and it was so hard. Like, I'm on the phone, I'm translating into Spanish to help them, and it was so hard. Like, please take our money, send us 50 kilos. It took six calls to do that. It's like, it shouldn't be that hard. And then, of course, you got to add shipping, and then it stays at the – then it's got to clear customs. It doesn't
correct.
Your house. It goes to the airport. It's a big ordeal. The cool thing about Daniela Velarde and IncaLiving.com, it's A, it's the real deal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And second, because she is basically Peruvian and she is based here in Florida, she receives the maca, and then she's selling it a lot in the health food stores here in the Miami area. But she has a website, and you can order. That is the only other maca besides the Echo and Dino Maca that I would recommend. Mm-hmm. Everything else, I can't vouch for it, and I would not recommend it. Because I know what people – because, you know, the last thing you want is for somebody to say, oh, Eric said that if I take 5 grams
right,
of
right.
Maca 3 times a day, I'm going to feel a difference. And you go, I didn't feel crap. And that's how I felt when I would walk into a health food store, and I'd buy these jugs, you know, these clear plastic jugs, and it's half maca, half air. And I said, why don't I – it would make me mad that I spent the money. And I'll tell you this, you know, when I take the original thing, I did it with Echo and Dino Maca. And I tell people, like, how do I know it works? Because, like, literally by the time I had my third serving of maca and I finished my dinner, I would get an erection. So that's a funny thing between us guys. But I go, look, if you're getting an erection regularly at the end of every meal after eating 15 grams of maca a day, that's telling you that it is activating your testosterone. Because if you don't have – if you're not going to get a testosterone a blood work just to see your number, then there's a very easy blood drawing way. It's like how many erections do you wake up with? So if you never wake up with an erection, that means testosterone is not where it should be at. If you wake up with an erection every day, okay, you're pretty good. If you're like 3 or 4 times a week, then you're okay. You're good.
That's
a very clear indicator of where you're at. It's funny because I met this acupuncturist who's 60 years old, and somebody asked him, hey, you're well-versed in Chinese medicine. Do you ever go for a checkup with a regular doctor? And this is what he said. He says, I'm 60 years old, and every day I wake up with, why should I go see a doctor? And I go, that's a pretty good argument, you know. So the Inca Leaving Maca is something that is easy to get. You can get it here. But again, here's the problem with maca, the way I see it with most people. When you get real maca, the first thing you got to do is smell it. And that way, any other supplement that claims to have maca, smell it too. Second, maca is food, okay? So you need to take food quantities. Maca is something that's like a mixture between a small potato and a ginseng root, right? It's a very small root that people eat in the Andes. It's like a staple. Like, you know, imagine making, like, you know, mashed potatoes. People eat maca the same way. So if you say this has 25 milligrams of maca, that's not going to do anything for you. You have to take industrial amount. You have to take food amounts of maca. To me, that's 10 to 20 grams for a training male. Females, however, do well with 1 to 1.5 grams of maca. And, you know, the funny thing is maca does not raise testosterone directly. What maca does, it balances progesterone. But when you balance progesterone naturally, it allows for your natural testosterone to rise. That's why maca is very simple. It's very economical. You can get like a 2-pound bag for probably like $26 or something in that effect. And again, but the key, you got to take 5 to 6 grams with every meal. That's how I got the initial results. And then, you know, the other thing I do is I cycle on and off maca. I'll take maca for 3 months and then I won't touch it for 3 months. That way your body doesn't get used to it.
Did you find when you were taking the maca, I mean, the second time now, you bumped your testosterone up like over 100 there. I mean, that's big.
Yeah.
The second time you went in and did the program again between the squats and the deadlifts, did you find a big difference in your power? I mean, you know, could you feel almost like the testosterone? And I know it's not what we're talking about with an injectable, but could you just feel like your stuff coursing through you when you're training? I mean, was it a whole different feeling the second time around now that you'd gone up before you went up again?
You know, that's a really good question. And the best way I can explain it is I had more than anything a sense of well-being.
There you go.
Well, because I was fully rested. And I mean, it's funny, sometimes I mention this to people, and you know, people take it as a joke, but to me it's a very good indicator. You know, in the past, I would do these squat workouts where, you know, I would basically kill myself for 2 hours, and then I was completely useless for 2 hours. Like, I literally had to, like, either watch TV or take a nap.
Yeah,
I couldn't
exactly.
do anything else. And again, this is just to me, like, I'm always looking for proof. I'm always scanning my body. So when I started training this way where I like, okay, if my goal is hormone optimization through exercise so that I can have youthful levels of hormones so I can train as – so I can live as long as I can, as best as I can, I found out that, you know, after the workout, I was having some of the best sex of my life because my body was completely primed, but it was also recovered. So I'm saying that I would finish my 10 squats and maybe do the roller and then go home. Again, I was having the best sex of my life. Whereas before, I'd have these killer squat sessions and I would have the desire, but I was like, no, I need to rest like
five hours. Right.
I need my recovery meal. Let me take a nap. You don't understand what I'm saying? And I'm going, well, how come I'm 41 and I'm having better sexual performance than, you know, when I was
25
training really, really hard, right? So,
well, you know, you know, Eric, not to walk over you, but I think you hit it earlier on just a little while ago. The sense of well-being is what it's all about. You know, physical culture is the greatest thing any of us can do, but we do it basically, obviously, everybody likes to just, you know, step over the edge. But let's face it, I mean, we're doing this to be better, stronger, and the last thing you want to do is fail in the bedroom. Most people won't say that out loud because it's embarrassing to people. And, you know, you don't want to see anybody end up like that. But if we're in beating the crap out of ourselves and getting stronger, we want performance in every avenue of your life, not just in the weight room.
Hey, you gotta fulfill your husbandly duties, man. You know?
Absolutely. Well, look.
Go ahead.
I mean, if you got some stuff to finish, but I know you had an hour, and we're at an hour now. I mean,
I'll just give you one more other recommendation, and then I'll tell you some of the stuff that people can get. I have some friends of mine that have a herb company. It's called The Right Herb Company. So you can go therightherbcompany.com. And they created something that they call the Power Blend. And they created basically for me, like they had some formulas. And I said, like, you know, it was okay. But, like, you know, like I wasn't, like, happy. So they said, okay, we're going to make one just for you. And it's a mixture of deer antler velvet, Sistanchi extract, and Tonkat
Ali.
And this stuff is really good. The other thing I like about them is that this is a couple, Luke and Colleen. And, you know, you can contact them on their website or on Facebook. Yep. They're probably more than happy to give you their cell phone number, and you can talk to them. And they're real people, not some salesman that doesn't know about herbs.
Right.
She's actually – Colleen is, both a chiropractor and acupuncturist, and she's actually got, like, a doctorate in herbs. Okay? So it's not like – she's a saleswoman telling you this is our number one seller. She can explain to you why the herbs are such. And I'm telling you, this formula, this power blend formula, other than maca, is one of the best things I've taken. Now, again, you got to take industrial amounts. So I take, you know, either 1.5 – I either take either a teaspoon three times a day, or I take, you know, a tablespoon twice a day. So they're going to go fast, but it's the other thing I found that, boom, immediately, like, you know, we got to do something about this. The other thing
Now, Eric, just so we know, because I don't want to forget to ask you, is that listed as the Power Blend for our listeners if they inquire about this?
You know what? This is so new that I don't know if it's listed, but if you contact the Right Herb Company and you let them know, I heard Eric Gutman talking about, because I think they're going to call it Power Shift. When they sent it to me, it was called the Power Blend because they did it for me. And then they're thinking, we're thinking of marketing and calling it Power Shift. So this is – I don't know if this is actually out on the market yet, but I'm going to send them
an email.
That's right. I'm going to send them an email and say, hey, I mentioned that, so you better make sure that you order up the supplies. So if there's demand, you can meet it. Again, that's the maca from Inca Living. I recommend it, but I don't recommend you do that year-round. It's good to change it so that your body, you know, your body never gets, you know, acclimatized to it.
You're used to it. Well, Eric, what about like in the power shift? Is that going to be a thing 3 months on, 3 months off do you want to cycle that?
Yes, I would do so. I mean, like if you want to stay on it for a long time, that's fine. But I would cycle on and off it so that you don't like, you know, fry the receptors. And the other thing I find, like after I take maca for 3 months, it annoys me. Like I don't want to take it anymore. Now, I still want to boost my testosterone, and then I shift. Maybe I'm taking fenugreek after that, or I'm doing something else, you know. The other thing I wanted to mention is if you're interested in any of the things that I have spoken to, you know, you can go to my website. I have a bunch of free articles talking about raising testosterone, you know, other things. You can get my full mobility program there, which is what I've used to heal myself of multiple things. And also, you know, it helps my wife. She had a case of vertigo. That's what healed her. You can get the full vestibular reset, exactly what I did, right there at ericgoo.com. And also, if you like these type of trainings, first of all, you can get the testosterone report for free, so you don't even have to buy anything. And I also cover how to raise testosterone in a series of articles within the website. So you can get the free report and see like four or five articles completely free. So the information is there. But I know sometimes people want, what I want you to show me, because that's what one thing like Bud told me. Sometimes you've met 5-10 dudes, you've read 20 books, and you're taking the best out of everyone, and you're teaching joint mobility. So I say, well, get this, and that. And Bud told me, like, you don't understand. When somebody's asking you that, they want to know they want to repeat exactly what you did with them. Yeah, they don't want to, like, piece what this guy and then extrapolate what this guy did. They're happy. So that's why you can get the mobility there, the vestibular reset there, and you can get my results. Again, I'm my own, like, experiment, because I'm a naval officer. I make my money.
Sure.
And I support my family in the Navy. So this, to me, is basically a privilege that I get to share my little experiments when they work with you guys. And, again, I got a lot more stuff that we can cover. And I'll be more
come another time. You know, it's interesting, too. I mean, when you're talking about Steve Maxwell and, you know, Mike Millar with that DVD, I mean, this is nice, though, that you've done something. You've taken the best from whatever you've looked at, read, or watched, created your own design, and basically you're giving this away for free. Because like you touched on with Bud, you know, a lot of people, I hate to say it, don't have the time, or they're just only going to look at so much. And like you said before, you know, you're going to throw your hands up and say, I can't do it, or I'm just not going to take the time to do it. So this is great that you've taken what you've learned from that, created your own style, and someone can take that and download that off your site or whatever you're going to do to get that. I commend you on that. Because a lot of people aren't going to give. I mean, that's some good stuff there. Even that, you know, just the testosterone report there. You know, I've seen them out. That people aren't giving those away. Or if they're giving you anything, it's always the and that's it. You don't know what the next and is, you know? So I commend you on that.
Because you know what pisses me off? And I learned about it. So here's, like, I guess the people who are more successful making money than I am with internet marketing.
Right.
So I remember, like, they told me, like, never, like, the report should not contain information. It should only make you thirsty to buy something. That's
absolutely.
And that pisses, because, you know, like, sometimes you get this thing that's going to have a free report, and it basically what they do is they badmouth their competition. And and here's what I found. Like, look, to me, like, I'm in the Navy, right? So I figure, like, if I'm making a report, it's like if an admiral or a general reads that, you know, it has to be true and accurate and, you know, in as concise as possible. You can't BS around, you know, you can't speak marketing to an admiral or a general, right?
Right.
And that's kind of like how I see. When I make a report, I see it just the same as like if I was sending it to a general or an admiral. But in this case, it's I'm sending it to someone who can say, okay, so if I implement this, I'm going to get – so if I do this, I get that. Like, so if you tell an admiral, hey, we're going to get, 20 aircraft on station, you can't just get two and say, well, what happened to the other 18? Well, you know, and you know, you can't do that. Or you're going to get your ass chewed. So that's the way I see it. It's because, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. When I go to these anti-aging seminars, here's why this is the thing that Bud, why I had to make a DVD and that, why you can get it, you know, in my website, either as a download or as a DVD.
Sure.
I would go, and again, actually it was the people from this ER company says, hey, I know you do the mobility. Can you teach us? So there were five guys, and I was going for the full body mobility. Mm-hmm. Within 7 minutes, 40 people were doing it with me. And these are all people in the anti-aging world that were like about 45 to 65 years of age. They loved it. And then they said, hey, can we do some of the workouts? So now I go into slow-mo squat. That means doing a squat where it's 10 seconds down, 10 seconds up, which is very safe for, you know, people that have not worked out in a while, because by going slow, you also get to work on the tendons and the ligaments, and, you know, you remove the ballistic component. Mm-hmm. Within a minute, everybody else – I said, how is it? You can admit jointly and people get fit and they will be happy about it. But the minute you get into a squat, they all give up. So I realized that there's a lot of power in transmitting the mobility because it's the thing they will use. It's like there was that article that said, what is the worst gun for self-defense? And it was the one that is very hard to get to. So if you have five locks, three saves to get to your gun and you need it in 10 seconds, that is the worst gun. And that's the same thing. If you have the most complicated, you know, convoluted program, you're never going to do it. But if it's simple and direct, you know, and it's easy to do, it's not intimidating, you'll do it. And if you do it every day, it's going to change you. And by changing you, it's also going to change what you're capable of doing. And that's why, you know, mobility, I'll do every day. I'll change my workouts. I'll go heavy barbells, and then I'll do nothing but body weight, and then I'll go kettlebells, and then I'll do MMA conditioning type stuff with bands and BOSUs. But I'll do mobility every single day.
Because it is. And let me tell you something, two things. I'm going to probably go out and get that because there's two things I'm working on right now. Like Bud, I do only dead stop stuff pretty much when I'm doing any type of weight training. So you can imagine the shearing forces on me when I'm coming out of the hole with a big squat on my shoulders, all right? First off. Secondly, as I told you, I'm training to get back to Iceland in 2015 to lift the Husafell stone. So, you know, obviously, you know, when you walk at times, if you step wrong or you hit like a little crack in the surface, you turn that knee with a 350-pound rock when you're walking, that can cause you some problems. So this would be of great interest to me, and I will look into that for sure because I got to keep myself very healthy. And after that crack down the stairs I had, you know, that was one of the worst things I've ever. I've also, when I went to Iceland in 08, I tore my bicep, so that had to be taken care of too. But I've been, knock on wood, I've been very good, Eric, but this would definitely probably help me out quite a bit.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny. I've healed so many injuries with the mobility that to me it's like the keeper. You know, like you can change everything, but that's the keeper. And, you know, and again, different people have different goals. But no matter whether you're a CrossFitter, a strongman as yourself, you know, a recreational you know, weakened warrior or a bodybuilder, everybody needs mobility. Because, you know, people get very passionate about what they do, and they believe that they have the one way and everybody else is wrong. And here's one of the best things I like about, like, special forces soldiers that I've met, you know, whether in the Navy SEALs or the Green Berets, they all have the same mentality about there is no one way to train or a way to clear a room or a way it is they when you do something, they go, okay, that is a way to do it. And they always look for other ways to achieve the same result. So when they work at, like, you know, at a safe house, you know, when they have like the mock up with the terrorists and the hostages and they're clearing a room, they don't go, this is the way to clear the room. Every time they go and they go, okay, this is one way to do it. You know, what is another way to do it? And that's how I see training. And you know, I respect that everybody has the thing they're passionate about. And my goal is like, how can I help everybody be better at what they're already doing? What are those, like you said, what are those basic components of physical, you know, performance that are cross-cultural and cross-discipline that benefit everyone? And that's kind of like what I focus on most. That's why I really believe in the mobility and the vestibular reset, especially once you're able to go front and back in all the crawls, you're going to find your ability to do whatever you're doing is improved. I had problems with, you know, getting the dip under the snatch. I was doing the double kettlebell snatch. And, I wanted to learn – I wanted to get that thing where I was able to dip under it. And I was doing it fine with the 55s. But with the 70-pounders, I was still kind of muscling it through. And after I did the 8 weeks of nothing but Spider-Man crawls, again, I touched the 70-pounders without touching a kettlebell in 8 weeks, and I finally had the form down. And the reason is because I built the connection from my right – shoulder to my left hip and vice versa. Yep. So now when I wanted to get under the weight, it was very easy for my body because now I had installed those movement patterns in it.
Absolutely. Well, Eric, obviously we'd love to have you back, and this was very interesting, and I know we could probably expand on testosterone even more, but before you and I sign off, why don't you give everybody your website address, anything that you know, you've got coming up or anything you've got in your mind that you're going to be writing and releasing, the floor is all yours.
So absolutely. So if you like my products, you can go to www.ericgutman.com, and that's ericgutmann. What I'm about to release, the Fountain of Youth system, which is, of course, the vestibular reset. And I was talking to Heather Jeffries, you know, Bud's wife, about doing a special for you guys where you get the full mobility and the Fountain of Youth together for a reduced price, and you get the free testosterone report. Other than that, you know, depending on, you know, your clientele out there, if you want a basic program to get in fitness that only uses a kettlebell and mostly body weight, you can get my Extreme Military Fitness Basic course. Now, this is the one I started to do when I did my transition from the bodybuilding type stuff into the full body weight type stuff and kettlebells. And what I found amazing about it, that without running a single day in 4 months, I actually ran 50 seconds faster. You know, shaving 15 seconds of the 1.5-mile run is not that normal, especially if you're not running. If you're hardcore, I once remember that people were talking again at one of these anti-aging seminars about, like, you train a certain way, you get bigger. Like, you know, if you train for strength, you get bigger. And if you train for conditioning, you get, you know, more shredded. And I was wondering, is there a way to get bigger and shredded at the same time?
Yep. But
I designed a program that actually did that. It's called Extreme Military Fitness Elite. Now, that one is really not for the beginning trainee. What it does is it incorporates a lot of heavy double kettlebell work. And by heavy double kettlebell work, I'm talking about 70 to 80% of your body weight, and then incorporates it with a lot of MMA-type drills using bungee cords, medicine balls, and it also works on mental toughness with a drill I developed to just really test your intestinal fortitude. And the funny thing that was that when I did that program, everywhere I went, the people that knew me would go, like, what are you doing differently? And it's this program. Again, it's very tough. It's very demanding. And I did it basically back to back to back. I did it three times. Because all my programs, I like to spend 3 months on them. I did these programs like four times in a row for a year. It was amazing. But after a while, I was like, wow, I need to change it up. I need to do more recovery. Because, you know, getting conditioning means you got to train. I was doing a 2 days on, 1 day off type thing. And during the training, I actually started taking, I think it was something called D-aspartic acid and fenugreek at the third week, because I was actually getting tired. So I need to recover. And I took that combo, and it really helped me out. And again, that's for the advanced trainee, because it's going to be very demanding. So somebody who's starting out can do a basic course after a couple of months, maybe do it twice, so that, you know, 6 months, then you can consider doing that. And again, I'm always putting my experiments in my blog, which you can read for free. My goal with my articles is to actually transmit something of value, and my goal is for it to be so valuable that in a year I can take the best articles and put them in a book, and then it's a product. So my articles are real articles, you know, because, you know, like some people write disguised articles where it's nothing but marketing hype. Would you like to get in the best shape? And they keep on talking about how you have to get their program, and they never tell you anything you can use. So my latest series of articles, I'm talking about stuff that we can cover in the next call. Like, I have a zapper. A zapper is a machine that runs an electric charge through the body with the goal of killing all the viruses, parasites, and bacteria, so that when you do a liver cleanse, it gets them out of your body. However, it also has what is called an electroporation effect. That means it makes the cell wall more permeable, and that means that if you take supplements or whatever, you absorb it more.
You absorb.
So I said, okay, what if I take my pre-workout and then run the Zap and then meditate? And it was funny because basically, like, it's like an electric meditation. And then you can read about that in the blog. I think I created a term just to kind of, like, put everything in perspective, because, like I said, most people look at you, and if you're not doing bodybuilding or CrossFit in a military gym, they just can't place it. I'm doing like hanging with the gravity boots to elongate my spine. I'm doing a whole bunch of weird recovery things for people there. So I just said, well, it's like muscle mysticism, you know. It's like it's like my religious experience to increase life and more enjoyment out of life. And that's basically what I got.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to give a few things of ours, and then we'll sign off. This is Motivation and Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. This is sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, www.fiorellobarbellco.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. We are on Twitter at Fiorello Eric. We're at Facebook at Fiorello Barbell. You can get a hold of me at FiorelloBarbell@NICAP.RR.com. And be on the lookout for the new Motivation and Muscle website, which is just about finished. It looks dynamite. So, Eric, once again, thanks for being on the show. Very interesting topics, and we got to get together very soon because this definitely stirs the primal forces, at least in me. This is I like the male-oriented shows where we're talking about some of the stuff that we're facing because I don't think – you know, I don't think men are as open to a lot of things about stuff like that. You want to kind of hide, you know, all right, I got low T or whatever. And it's great. I'm really happy we did a show, at least half the show on that, obviously, and all the other things were so pertinent to training and just your longevity. So thanks for being on the show. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, my friend.
Okay, so for Eric Gutman, this is Eric Fiorello, and you have a great night and a great week, and we'll be talking to you soon. Thanks and good night.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.